the Pravishna Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jokachara Dusota Sapasi Simad is Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai Tai Ho Prema. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Lord. Tissue. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 7, Chapter 9, Text 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Navodvijay paradarataya vaitaranyas tadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chittaha so chetato vimukta chetasa indiyarta Maya Sukhaya Bharam Upahato Vimudham. Synonyms. Na.
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 Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Udvijay.
Udvijay.
I am disturbed or afraid.
I am disturbed or afraid.
Para.
Para.
O Supreme.
O Supreme.
Ratyaya.
Ratyaya.
Insurmountable.
Insurmountable.
Or very difficult to cross.
Very difficult to cross.
Vaitaranya.
Vaitaranya.
Or the Vaitarani, the river Vaitarani. Of the material world.
The river of the material world.
Tvatvirya. Of your lordship's glories and activities.
Gayana.
From chanting or distributing.
Maha.
Amrita.
Amrita.
In the great ocean of nectarian spiritual bliss.
Great ocean of nectarian spiritual bliss.
Magna Chittaha.
Magna Chittaha.
Whose consciousness is absorbed.
Whose consciousness is absorbed.
Shoche.
Shoche.
Simply lamenting.
Simply lamenting.
Tataha.
From
that.
That.
Vamukha Chaitasa.
Vamukha
Chaitasa. Fools and rascals who are bereft of Krishna consciousness.
Fools and rascals who are bereft of Krishna consciousness.
India Artha.
India Artha.
In sense gratification.
In sense gratification.
Maya Sukhaya.
Maya Sukhaya.
For temporary illusory happiness.
Temporary illusory happiness.
Param.
Param.
The false burden or responsibility.
Responsibility.
Maintaining one's family, society, and nation.
Maintaining one's family, society, and nation.
And elaborate arrangements for that purpose.
Udvahata.
Udvahata. Who are lifting.
Who are lifting.
By making grand plans for this arrangement.
By making grand plans for this
arrangement. Vimudhan.
Vimudhan.
Although all of them.
Although all of them.
Are nothing but fools and rascals.
Nothing but fools and rascals.
I'm thinking of them also.
I'm thinking of them also.
Translation. O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. Purport. Throughout the material world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world, and this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. Nonetheless, although they are making elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have been described herein as vamudha, fools. This material world has been described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkhalayam ashashvatam, Bhagavad Gita 8:15, temporary and miserable. But these fools are trying to turn the material world into sukhalayam, a place of happiness. Not knowing how everything acts by the arrangement of material nature, which works in her own way, prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vamudhatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature, Bhagavad Gita 3:27. There is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, to punish the demons. Although the Asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands and different types of weapons to punish them. She is carried by her lion carrier, or the modes of passion and ignorance. Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature. But at the end, everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. There is a river known as Vaitarani between the material and spiritual worlds, and one must cross this river to reach the other side, or the spiritual world. This is an extremely difficult task. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Esha Gunamayi Mamamaya Daratya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. The same word, Daratya, meaning very difficult, is used here. Therefore, one cannot surpass the stringent laws of material nature except by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, although all materialists are baffled in their plans, they try again and again to become happy in this material world. Therefore, they have been described as vimudha, first-class fools. As for Prahlad Maharaj, he was not at all unhappy, for although he was in the material world, he was full of Krishna consciousness. Those who are Krishna conscious, trying to serve the Lord, are not unhappy. Where one has no assets in Krishna consciousness and is struggling for existence is not only foolish, but extremely unhappy also. Prahlad Maharaj was happy and unhappy simultaneously. He felt happiness and transcendental bliss because of his being Krishna conscious. Yet he felt great unhappiness for the fools and rascals who make elaborate plans to be happy in this material world. Omigyana timurandasya jnananjana shalakaya chaksurunmulitam yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is Prahlad Maharaj's heartfelt prayers. And he's expressing his happiness and his distress. And his distress is for people's consciousness, because that's what really causes suffering. People think that what causes suffering is their destiny. But actually, what causes suffering is their free will. Destiny is what happens to you, and free will is how you react. An intelligent person invests his happiness in something that he can actually control. You can control how you react to your destiny. You can't control your destiny itself. And in fact, that attempt to control your destiny is the consciousness itself that causes you suffering. Because that's called false ego. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. And that consciousness itself puts you more and more into the bodily platform of life. It's like in the Bhagavad Gita. I'll give you a verse and you can analyze what this means. Asochan anvisochas tvam pragyavadam chabashase gatasun agatasun chana. While speaking learned words, Arjuna, you're a fool. The wise man lament neither for the living nor the dead. That sounds like a person who's very heartless and cruel, doesn't it? But in the Bhagavad Gita, it says it's a wise person. They lament neither for the living nor the dead. So, I'm wondering, when you're reading Bhagavad Gita, do you think of the verses? Do you think of the verses? Probably, isn't that cruel? What?
It's a bit hard, yeah.
It's a bit hard, isn't it? The wise man lament neither for the living nor the dead. That means when a person is like drowning, right? And you're a devotee and you walk by. You say, anyway, they're not the body anyway. What kind of philosophy do we have? And what kind of people does it create? The wise men lament neither for the living nor the dead. Can we reconcile this with humanity? Karunika, how do you reason? Should we take this verse to heart?
We don't lament, but we act at the time.
What about our heart? What about our heart? Don't we feel something?
Yeah, we act. We do something because of our heart wants us to act, but then we don't lament how it turns out.
I don't think that verse means the after effect. I think it's referring to the consciousness of, you know, we have to, you know, I was in the Lower East Side of Manhattan when the World Trade Towers collapsed. You know? And I contacted Tamal Krishnamurti. I said, what would you do? Right? Would you preach? What would you do? He said, I'd be there on the right on the front lines handing out water to my people. That's what he told me. He said he would have run outside and bought some water and went right down to the... What is this mundane welfare work? Okay, this is what this is what I think, right? This is what I think. You don't lament for what's inevitable, right? The body is changing. You don't lament that the body is changing. But what you do lament for is that people are suffering due to ignorance. That's what you lament for. This verse doesn't say you don't have compassion, you don't, but you lament for the real cause of compassion. Just like my mother is 92 years old, right? And I told you last year my brothers took away her car. You know, now she's confined. And the people are very independent. My brothers would said they'll build her a wing on the house. You could live with us. She wants her own life. You know, and she's very active. But at the age of 92, finally old age has hit her. You know, and it's very, I feel very sad. Right? But I don't feel sad necessarily that she's dying. I feel sad that she has no knowledge. And she thinks she's dying. I feel very bad for her. That she doesn't have Atma Gyan. It's not within her frame of reference. And therefore she's in such a fearful condition. Right? Because for her, you know, even though she believes in God in one sense, it's not any realization of it. For her, death is the end of existence. Right? So So I don't lament that she's dying or getting old and changing bodies. I lament that she's in the illusion that death is the end of existence. And therefore she suffers for that. So we should be, the whole nature of a devotee is compassionate. But they know what the real problem is and what the real cause of suffering is. Jiva doi Krishnanam sarva dharma sar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says sarva dharma sar. That the sarva, the essence of all religion is jiva doi, is compassion. Actually, there's doya and there's kripa. Kripa is compassion for an individual person, and doya is the feeling of compassion for everyone. So the word is jiva doi, sarva dharma sar. That the essence of all religion is compassion. Krishnanam. Jiva doi, Krishnanam, sarva dharma. And therefore to give people the holy name. That's the real compassion. The real compassion is to enlighten people and wake them up from the illusion that death is the end of material existence. That's an illusion. Now, I'm not a child avatar, but I did have two spiritual realizations before I was 6 years old. Probably is that I was a gyani in my last life. One, I was on the second floor porch and I was thinking, like one floor up, I was thinking if I jump off the building, right, is it, what was I thinking? I think if I jump off the building, is that my destiny or my free will? I don't know. I had that realization, something like that. But the other one is I remember. I was right there. I'm in the street. It's called Cropsey Avenue. You go straight on Cropsey Avenue for about 10 minutes, you'll get to Coney Island, which is a low-class amusement area. And I remember I was thinking what happens if when I get older. I was looking into my future. I was 5 years old, I was looking into my future, and I went, okay, I'm 20, I'm 30, I'm 40, and then like, ah, I'm going to die. Right? That was the realization I had. I just kept on, I remember to this day thinking like that, I'm this age, and then I'm this age, and I'm this age, and I go, ah, I don't want to die. The fact that even a young child is afraid of death, even though they've never experienced it in this life, is actually the proof of reincarnation. Because where's that impression come from? It's a samskara from their previous experience. This is mentioned in Yoga Sutra. It's a samskara from their previous experience. That's why we're so afraid of death, because we've experienced it before. And it was a horrible experience, because we experienced it without any knowledge. The experience without any knowledge, and it was such a terrifying experience. The end of existence, or what you think is the end of existence. And therefore people try to avoid facing it. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam. I don't know if anybody knows that verse. Kaladi, what is it? Pashanapi, Napashyati. Anybody know the rest of that verse? It's in the second canto. It says that even though my father's died and my father's father's died and then, you know, and everyone has died, right? Everyone thinks that somehow they're protected. And it says, Pashanapi Napashyati. They see, but they don't see. Pashanapi Napashyati. The greatest psychological phenomena, denial of death. There's one author called Ernest Becker. He wrote a book called Denial of Death. And his analysis was that the whole psychology in the world is people trying to deny their non-existence. They're searching for eternality, and therefore They try to become famous and exploit other people. There's nationalism. There's family. It's all a trying to, it's a psychological aberration, trying to fight what the illusion they're in of non-existence. Trying to fight that. My grandfather, he also lived into his 90s, my mother's father. And he was known in the family for having never going to a funeral. He never went to a funeral. He would always get sick. And then, somehow or other, when he died, I happened to be in the United States in September. And never in the United States. I was always in India. But somehow or other, there was some meeting in New Vrindavan, and I was called to go to that meeting. And I was back. So somehow I went to the funeral, and it was a posh, my grandfather's sons. They were both multi-millionaires. And as my mother's father, she's a little bit more modest, although she did make some money. So I went to the funeral. It was very, very posh, but I went like this. My father was begging me, you know, can you wear a pair of pants? That's the way we were in those days, you know, sensitive to things. It wasn't even ironed. I went in, and then my uncle gave the eulogy to my grandfather. So my grandfather, he had terminal cancer, and he walked out of the hospital 7 times. And then my uncle glorified my grandfather by saying what his last words were. And now you'll know what kind of bumsaw family I come from. I thought I was strong, the strongest of the strong. I thought I was wise, the wisest of the wise. They didn't mention the other four, but it's not true. So that's what the suffering. So, an intelligent person, he invests his happiness in his consciousness, not his destiny. Because the destiny is something you can't control, and the consciousness is something you can control. And a lot of times what happens is the suffering that we undergo is God's way of trying to get us to make this shift in how we search for happiness. Because we're all in this world, and that's what's being described here, and what Prahlad is lamenting, that we're trying to make happiness, and I've explained this before, by having the world move around our desires, and that becomes our objective. You know, we have this vision that, and we all think it, yes, just give me a few more years, it'll all be in place. According to my desires, the world will be. I know it. And therefore, what is suffering? Suffering is when you have that kind of objective of happiness, and the things go against your desire. So if you have that consciousness, you're for certain to be in a suffering condition. Because it's dukkhalayam avishashvatam. It gets you one way or the other. It's suffering, and even if it's not, it is, because it's temporary. Very beloved godbrother, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he used to have a sticker on his briefcase when he used to preach in New York. It's kind of like a real good mood of New York. Life is tough, and then you die. So what happens is, when there's intensity of suffering, which means when Krishna moves the world rapidly against your desires, then it forces you to go, it forces you to shift your strategies into happiness of consciousness, which is reaction to your destiny. I always was a fan of comedy, more than music. People, when I was young, everyone would go to the Fillmore East. And they would go to all the famous, I'd like comedy. One of my favorite comedies, comedians, was someone called Rodney Dangerfield. And his whole thing was, I don't get any respect. You know, so he had this routine. And it was so funny. He went like this. He said, you know, I came home, right? My wife asked me for a home improvement loan of $5,000. I gave her the money. She asked me to leave. He said, I don't get any respect. You know? He said, then I went home. He said, then I went home. He said, I thought I'd encourage the family. Right? So he said, I thought I'd encourage the family. So the kids weren't eating. You know, my wife made a nice steak and potatoes. I said, you know, eat. You know, come on, eat. You grow up like your father. They all became vegetarians. He kept on his line, was, I don't get any respect. Then I got so depressed, I called the suicide hotline. They encouraged me. Really? Yeah, I know all these jokes because I have one person. She's practically my most faithful follower, you know. And her husband's not a devotee. But I have a really good relationship with him. And that's our link. That type of comedy. But, there's that suffering. Therefore, the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Vishad Yoga, the yoga of depression. Because the whole thing is when Arjuna gets into a situation where you see that moving the world just doesn't work, if that's your objective, it just doesn't work. And so Arjuna's situation is a situation of everyone. It just doesn't work. Because you'll be in a situation where, he said, nimitani viparitani. It means the cause is just the opposite. You're trying for happiness and the opposite happens. In local vernacular, in my native language. It says, damned if you do, damned if you don't. So what happens is that forces you, if you have some piety, some good association, it forces you to really make a solution. Because even if you adjust everything properly, then you die and you lose it. So even if it's adjusted so properly, it's just as much suffering as effort as you put into it. Just as much suffering as the effort you put into it, because you die. So what happens is the intelligent person really sincerely tries to shift their consciousness. And, you know, and I saw this actually with one lady in our community. You know, and I've seen this with lady, when they have their first kids, it's like a shock, especially for, you know, is a, you know, American lady, she controlling the world her own way, and then all of a sudden have a kid. And all of a sudden, you are forced. You know, you're in the consciousness that everything's in my world. And then you're forced to be in the world of another person, which is this little kid. And that's it. You have no freedom. You can't go out and do what you want. You can't do this. You can't breathe. You can't sleep. You can't do this. And you're just forced into that thing. And then for the lady, it's kind of, it's, you know, it's a lot of anxiety. You know, now I saw, you know, maybe after 10 years, then she has another kid. She had two kids. And I saw, due to her, you know, Krishna consciousness and the, you know, mature development, you know, just surrendering to the situation. Rather than trying to lament that I'm not the controller and enjoyer, doing her duty. Same thing, the same sacrifice. I know because, you know, I'm her guru. She can't even see me for 5 minutes. You know, I'm right in the neighborhood. Can't even see me for 5 minutes. Because she's not also in an extended family. It's just her and the kid. Which is a very difficult situation. But I see, due to maturity, she surrendered to the situation. And there's a whole different kind. It's the same destiny. It's a whole different consciousness. It's trying to get happiness at a different level, a dharmic level. It's trying to get happiness not from controlling the world, but by serving the world. In this commentary I read on the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the commentator gave a brilliant example of a frog. And it gave the example of this, the frog, and they had this boiling water and they had this hot water. Right? And the frogs that touched the boiling water were much better off than the frogs that touched the hot water. Because the ones that touched the boiling water jumped out immediately, even though they got scalded. The ones that got the hot water, they kind of got used to it. And it just killed them. So it's like that. The people who have the situation where it just doesn't move, it's not hot. They just die. But when there's difficulty, if that person tries to get out and go deeper, they live. Because life is the realization that I'm eternal. So that's spiritual consciousness. And as devotees, we have difficulties. But if we have to shift this gear, and once you do, problems end. And what you see this most clearly, as I see it in Vrindavan, is with people who have terminal diseases. When people have terminal diseases, I've seen it. See, initially, they're trying to cure the terminal disease. You know what I'm saying? And they fly to Peru and, you know, Mexico. And, you know, they try to cure the terminal disease. Actually, you should. It's your duty to live as long as you can. That's Shastra. But there comes a time where God is actually saying, no, I'm taking the body. And you see the people still fighting. That's called false ego. But that's the problem. Because it's the false ego, I'm the controller and enjoyer, which puts you into the bodily consciousness, which makes you suffer. So I see they're fighting and they're fighting and they're fighting. And then at a particular time, as they're devotees, they surrender to Krishna's will. That's giving up the false ego. I'm not the controller. Krishna is the controller. They surrender to Krishna's will. And then the problem's solved. They become happy. Because at that moment, when you do that, you become detached from the body and you begin to realize the soul. It's all consciousness. That's why that verse is Daivi Esha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharateya Mameva Ye Papadyantema. That this is all divine. It's Krishna's energy. Dharateya. And it is impossible to get out of. It's impossible to surmount this energy. Impossible to surmount this energy. And why? Because Krishna is sending it. Krishna is sending this energy. Why? It's the illusory potency. Why are you in the illusion that you are in the body? Because you want to be. You want to be in the illusion that you're not a devotee of God. You want to be in the illusion. What's illusion? To not see what's there. What's there? I'm a soul. I'm a servant of God. That's the other form of illusion, to see what's not there. I'm seeing, I'm the enjoying controller, and I'm not. Krishna does that because we want that. So it's his energy. So it's impossible to overcome. Why? Because it is following our consciousness. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, eko bohunam yob didati kaman. There's one supreme eternal, there's many supreme eternals. There's one supreme living force, there's many supreme living forces. But the one is maintaining the many. Eko bohunam didati kaman. It's supplying the desires. So you want to not be a devotee, then you can fulfill your desire in the illusion that I am the controller and enjoyer, where your consciousness becomes reflected on a body that allows you to do that. So, it's Krishna's energy, but it's following your desire. So, if you want to conquer that energy, to fight the destiny and the material nature and the death and the birth and the old age and the disease. If you want to fight it, you can't, because it's a product of your desire. But if you change the desire, then easily you get rid of it. Because it's like this. This is the illusory energy. It's following your desire. I don't want to be a devotee. Okay. And then you say, I don't want this. Well, no, you do want this. So then, when you become a devotee, then the energy goes. You surrender in that way. So, Prahlad Maharaj, He's not suffering because he's not in that consciousness. And therefore, there's no suffering for him. He's not in duality and fear. That's suffering. Duality and fear. Bayam dvitiya. Bineveshi tashat. Ishad upe tasya vipariyo smriti. Ishad upe. You're turning from God, and therefore you turn from yourself. And therefore you have to adopt another identity. And from that comes duality and fear. The devotee is not in duality and fear. That's the suffering. The suffering is not what is actually happening to you. The suffering is how you're thinking about it. So, he's not suffering on that regard. But he suffers for people who have that. And the wise man doesn't lament for the destiny of people. He laments for how they're reacting to it. So this is Prahlad. And therefore, he wants to give this consciousness to others because he's compassionate. He wants to preach Krishna consciousness. He feels for those other people. So that's Prahlad. Any questions?
Just one little point, Maharaj. In isolation, although the whole class was about that particular point, but one of those last things you just said, your suffering is not what's happening to you, but it's how you're thinking about it. Just that point in isolation, can you just
elaborate on it?
Some elaboration, yeah.
Yeah, ultimately, ultimately, the body is transforming. That's called vikara. We're not transforming. But we're suffering because we're identifying with that. And Prabhupada gives the example of a child who's given a pot of water because the child wants the moon. It's a great example. The child wants the moon. He can't have the moon by his constitution, so the mother gives a pot of water in which the moon is reflected. Right? So now the child thinks he has the moon. Right? And he can't hold the pot, so it starts to shake, and he becomes worried that the moon is moving. Right? So his suffering is not what's happening, that the moon is moving. His suffering is that he thinks the moon is moving. So in the same sense, ultimately we do feel the pains and all these things. But ultimately, the suffering is because of the identification that this is happening to us to a certain extent. And when we're embodied, we'll feel it. Even someone who's dying, a sadhu told me this. He said the real pain of death is not the physical pain. He says because when there's too much pain, then you can go into coma. You generally go into coma. Or if they can give you drugs. But the real pain is giving up our attachments, including our whole identity. our family, our world. That's the real pain. So it's more the consciousness than the thing that's actually happening on the external platform. Although, you know, I mean, has any of you read a book called Salted Bread? One person. Best book I ever read. Best book I ever read. It's such an incredible book. People were telling me to read it for years and years, and I never read it, and then finally I read it. And it's about it's an incredible story. It's about these people, true story, who came to Krishna consciousness in Armenia in the beginning days. And there was these friends that loved each other as much as you can imagine people loved each other. Really. Real true fraternal friendship. And they joined Krishna consciousness, and they're captured by the KGB, and they are tortured. They are tortured. I mean, it's an incredible story. So it's not that there's not pain and difficulty, etc. But even that, you know, even things like that, when the consciousness is different, it's really the fears, you know, that really is the suffering, the attachments and the fears. But ultimately, it's that too. Ultimately, it's a mental conception. It's how we think more than what happens. Any other questions?
Yeah. Maharaj, oftentimes it seems like our free will to respond to our destiny is limited because of our desires. You know, like we're unable to respond properly because we're forced by the modes to respond improperly. And even when we start sadhana bhakti, we kind of just do it for ourselves or something. So how do we actually, what is it that really changes that desire to be able to respond properly?
Well, the degree that we're under the modes is the degree that we're sacrificing our free will. Right? In the mode of ignorance, you don't have any free will. Right? Like an animal. Right? Or let's say I get drunk and then I go to sleep. Right? And then I get up and I'm groggy and someone says something to me, then you know, it's like, throw off my charter and I'm ready to fight. But if I've just been meditating, right, then you kind of gotta, when you're in the mode of goodness, it gives you a distance between what happens to you and how you react. So the degree that you're actually in the mode of goodness is the degree that you have free will. But the fact that we're in Krishna consciousness and we're practicing Krishna consciousness and purifying ourselves is increasing the degree of our free will. Our ability to act according to our intelligence. So obviously, we're not yet perfect, but hopefully it's increasing. So that at a particular time in life, what we want to do and know is good, we will do. Any other questions? Yes.
I've never been able to understand how it is that if our destiny propels us to a different body in the future, yeah, according to our desires,
yeah,
how is it that people take birth in these incredibly terribly, terribly handicapped situations where they're just like in wheelchairs with no ability to communicate practically with the outside world. How in the world could they have desired that kind of body?
Well, there's two things. Say your question again so I understand it clearly.
I can't understand how, if we have our consciousness determines by our desires, the next body we get.
Two things. It's our desires and our deeds. And our deeds are our desires. So I'm not saying there's no reaction to what you do, but it was based on our desires. So it's the same. Yeah, you know what happens. This is what's really scary. Is that we have a stock of karma, and it can't all be fit in the same body, because there's contradictory things. We deserve to be rich, we deserve to be poor, we deserve to be healthy, we deserve to be sick. So what happens is, you know, God has this plan to, make us moral and spiritual and give us reactions. So what happens is, at the time of our death, right, then God decides, there's a whole stock out there. We just got a little thing has been funneled in. So in the next life, another batch is funneled in. You never really know what's funneled in. It's like playing Russian roulette. You never know what's funneled in. So your next thing may not be, you know, whatever it is. You know, that's why it's, Punam Mushaka Bhava, again a mouse. You know, you're the rich man, then you're the poor man begging outside the house. Then you're the rich man, then you're the poor man, then you're... So it has to do with our karma and how we're going to be purified. But ultimately, of course, it's created to desires. Because we have certain desires, we get certain situations that have to purify us from those desires too. Okay? Yes, last question.
Marisha, where do we draw the line in between responsibility for our own actions and our free will, and then ultimately Krishna being in control of everything that's going on?
Yeah, well, it's Krishna's given us free will, right? Prabhupada said that one time. They asked Prabhupada, if God can do everything, then, why doesn't he, make everything, why doesn't he, free us from all sufferings, or else, if God can do everything. Then Prabhupada's answer was very subtle, but it's very brilliant. He said, God did not make you as dead stone. Now you have come here, don't blame God. So, if we think, let us make a perfect world, we make a perfect world, but our perfect world would be as people would be dead stones, because there would be no freedom. But so freedom is abused. So, actually, it's a very nice question, because in the 8th chapter of the 2nd canto, Maharaj Prickett, as he's being enlightened, he wants to ask all these kind of questions. So he wanted to know how, the pure living entity comes to the material world. And then the answer is given, the first desire is for the living entity to come here, the second desire is to God to fulfill it. So God is fulfilling our desires. So he's in complete control. It's dependent on him, but he's responsive to our desires. Does that answer your question? Okay, think about it. Okay. Okay, for today we'll just end now. Okay, the Prabhupada key job. Yeah.